Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Unhinged, The One and Only Ivan, Words on Bathroom Walls, The Sleepover, and Tesla. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and have an interview with the director of Unhinged, as well as talking about the home cinema roundup featuring a spotlight on Dora and the Lost City of Gold. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news this week is theaters are reopening this week, and wherever they can. I know, like, in New York, New Jersey areas, they still haven't. But in pretty much the rest of the country that's not dealing with huge impacts of COVID cases, like in Los Angeles, they are reopening. The AMC has reopened. I believe Regal, I believe Cinemark has opened. And of course, they're doing limited seating, keeping space for social distancing. And this is a test run. We got 3 weeks of this, guys. We have this week with new movies, including Unhinged being the big one. Yeah, Words on the Bathroom Wall and Tesla, I think, are coming out in theaters as well. But Unhinged is the big wide release. Next week, we've got New Mutants and Bill and Ted Face the Music. And then the week after that, you've got Tenet. And I think at that point, they're going to see how things go. They're going to see if people will come back to the theaters, especially initially. This is also a time to see if the cinemas can actually make enough money to justify keeping their doors open. Because, you know, as expensive as it is to not run a business, it can be more expensive to actually run the business and staff the business and not make enough revenue to cover, you know, the salaries of the people who are working there. So this is an untested time. Nobody knows if people are going to come back. And that is a question. I mean, here's the thing. My advice to everybody out there who wants to go see these movies, if you want to go to the movies, patronize your cinema, but follow the protocols. Because if you don't follow the protocols, if you don't wear your mask, if you don't socially distance, and if you don't follow the rules they have set up in the theaters, they're just going to have to close their doors all over again. So this is a great time for the people who want these things to be open, go in there and open, but play by the rules. And what's interesting about it is I've gotten a lot of people asking me, would I go back to theaters? And that's a good question. I think a lot of people are asking, critics in particular, because that's our lives, is sitting in movies, theaters, and watching films. Would I feel comfortable going back? And that's a tougher question. Because here's the thing, Slash Film did an article this week about it, and they talked to two professors of epidemiology, and both of these people were just like, no, don't go back to the theaters. Again, the risks of the theater is the fact that you're in one giant room for a couple hours, and you don't know who you're with, and even if you're socially distanced, the circulation system may not be ideal for this. You can't open windows and see a movie. You know, as opposed to even school, when kids are going back to school, you can open windows. And, you know, different than people have said, well, what's the difference between that and a gym? I'm like, well, the gyms I've been in tend to be large, and you can go on days where it's not very busy. And you really only spend, you know, what, a half hour, 45 minutes at the gym? I mean, unless you're really doing a heavy workout, but a lot of people get going to the gym, they do their treadmill or whatever, and then they go home. Whereas in a movie theater, you're in there for a couple hours. And I personally am not comfortable going back. I will say that. I'll go on the record. I'm just not personally comfortable going back. And the reason for that is because every doctor I've heard talk about it, whether it's these doctors that Slash Film talked to, or if it's my own personal doctors who I've asked, or if it's just friends of mine who are doctors. I got a couple friends who are doctors, and they're like, I wouldn't go back. So it makes me a little bit nervous. I've got some risk factors. And people in my life who I see on a very regular basis and have to see, like my mother. So I want to keep myself healthy. And there's also a morbidity effects that go on with this. There's also nerve damage and heart damage and lung damage that people have been experiencing. Again, I've talked to doctors, like friends of mine who are doctors, and they're saying they're seeing this stuff now. So personally, I'm not comfortable going back to theaters. But look, if you want to go back to theaters, go back to theaters, but play by the rules, because if you don't play by the rules, they're going to shut down again. And then all these great releases that are going to be coming out in October and November are going to be pushed. Another piece of news this week is the fact that Ben Affleck is going to be returning as Batman in the Flash movie. Now, of course, he famously quit the role of Batman, and then they recast Robert Pattinson in the movie The Batman, which I guess is rebooting it on its own. But the Flash movie is going to be doing a multiverse thing. They did it on TV. They were doing multiverse stuff on TV. And I think even Ezra Miller shows up in the DC television series briefly in sort of a multiverse version of The Flash. So they're talking about bringing in Ben Affleck as well as Michael Keaton in this multiverse version of Batman, which I'm curious to see where Flash goes with this, because I've always liked multiverse stuff. And that's part of the reason why I like that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse so much. That's why I'm looking forward to the Doctor Strange sequel. So I'm looking forward to that. I mean, it makes me curious. I still think DC really has to get its ducks in a row and figure out what the heck they're doing, because they still have not achieved the level of cohesion that Kevin Feige did with Marvel. And the last piece of news really quickly is that John Wick 4 and 5 are coming. Aren't you excited? They're going to, I think, filming them either back to back or continuously or whatever, but they're setting those up. So, you know, Keanu Reeves gets another franchise to keep going under his belt, and good for him. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to hit is for The Devil All the Time, which drops on Netflix on September 16th.
You ever think about how we ended up orphans living in the same house?
I know what my daddy did.
You take pictures?
I do. I see a smile pretty enough to photograph, that is.
That ain't no preacher. He's as bad as they got on the radio.
When people look back on it, they ain't had no other choice.
Excuse me, preacher. You got time for a sinner?
This one made a lot of splash and noise last week. It came out. I was covering a couple other trailers, so I didn't get to this. And it stars Tom Holland and Robert Pattinson and Jason Clarke. And it's sort of a thriller that takes place in a heavy religious community. It looks interesting. It looks like it's certainly going for the award bait feel. I mean, we're going to start getting that. It's September. We're going to be in the last 3-4 months of the year. And so you're going to start seeing award films, and some of them might push aggressively to streaming or online services because of them wanting to get them released for any sort of Academy Award consideration. So, I mean, this looks interesting. It doesn't look like it's a lickety-split action movie, and I think it's like 2.5 hours long, but I'll be curious to check it out in September. The next one is Death on the Nile, which comes to theaters, maybe, on October 23rd.
The crime is murder. The murderer is one of you.
I don't feel safe here. I don't feel safe with any of them.
It's time to face the consequences.
I have investigated many crimes, but this has altered the shape of my soul. I am Detective Hercule Poirot, and I will deliver your killer.
This is, of course, the sequel to Murder on the Orient Express, which Kenneth Branagh directed and then, of course, starred in as Hercule Poirot. And it's continuing the Hercule Poirot version, doing the other very, very famous book that Agatha Christie wrote. And I think the last time they did Death on the Nile, I mean, they may have done it on like TV versions, but the last big budget movie version was sometime in the early 80s. Had like Mia Farrow and Simon McCorkendale. And so, I mean, it certainly do. And especially after seeing Murder on the Orient Express and seeing how slick of a production that was, I'm looking very much forward to Death on the Nile. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the one and only Ivan and Tesla. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the one and only Ivan. Based on the children's book, this story follows a gorilla at a circus in a mall who yearns to be something more.
The one and only
Why do they want an angry gorilla anyway?
You're a silverback. He terrifies humans.
Who's that?
My sister.
Where's your sister now?
I don't remember.
Memories never leave us. They just get out of reach.
Whoa, did you draw all these?
A gorilla.
Who draws?
This was originally supposed to come to theaters, but like a lot of movies that came out or were planned this summer, it got switched to a streaming platform, and this is now available on Disney Plus, so you can get it in your own home. It's unlike Mulan, it's for free on the service. It's not an extra upcharge, even though it was going to be a release in theaters. Now, it's actually inspired by a true story. I don't want to say based on a true story. It's inspired by a true story, where this actual circus was in this mall, in this shopping mall. I think it started in the 60s and went well into the 80s, at least. And they had this gorilla and an elephant, and I don't know what the real circus had, but in this movie, you've got the gorilla, you got an elephant, you got a seal, you got a rabbit, you got a hen, there's a dog that wanders around in there. There's just sort of this ragtag group of characters, and they kind of yearn to be free. And you watch the trailer, you get the sense that it's this gorilla that can paint, and that's what it's about. It's really not. There's a lot more to it, and it's more about the animals wanting to be free from this very restricted life, because, you know, they're not even in like a really nice zoo. Like, I live in Columbus, Ohio, and the Columbus Zoo is a fantastic zoo. And it was very progressive back in the 80s. And I think even the 70s, taking down the cages and actually building viable habitats and stuff that's much more natural to the animal's environment, instead of just putting like in a cage on a concrete floor or, you know, just in a little dirt pit or anything like that. And I've been to the Columbus Zoo many times and seen the animals, and it's a really nice zoo, but not this one. This one, they're in cages and it's a circus and they have to perform. And, you know, in the true story, in the real issue, there was a push to free the animals. And that's kind of the focus of this movie, where a new elephant comes in, a young elephant, and the elephant wants to be in the wild. And Ivan, who remembers just barely being in the wild, you know, there's ideas there. And it's told from the gorilla's point of view, Ivan, and he's played by Sam Rockwell. And one of the things I was a little worried about when I was going to see this movie, was that it was just going to be a talking animal movie with a bunch of fart jokes in it. And don't get me wrong, there's a couple fart jokes in it. You can't have an animal movie without some fart and poop jokes in it. But there's a real tenderness there, and there's a real story there. It's not just like Doolittle, which I thought was kind of fun earlier this year, the one with Robert Downey Jr. I thought that had a certain degree of entertainment value, but that really was just a talking animal movie being goofy and silly. This one has a lot more to it, and there's a little more depth. Now, I will admit, you know, my life this summer has been just a string of miserable suffering and terrible things that have happened. I talked about a couple weeks ago, my father died about a month ago, and I just found out this week that I have to put my dog to sleep because she's getting old and she's 15. She's got a lot of problems. And so I watched the screener of this the day I got home from the vet, who had, after being told, yeah, look at all this stuff that's wrong with her, it's probably the best thing for her to be put down. So I was already an emotional wreck. And then I'm watching this movie about animals. And I mean, it's hitting all the different feel buttons. So I may watch this movie 6 months from now and be like, oh, it's not that good. But I mean, I was in the right emotional state to just dive right in. And I'm crying and I'm weeping as I'm watching this movie. And I'm like, normally these things don't have that big of an effect on me. But that's, of course, because I'm ushering my dog out of this realm. So that's hanging over my head as I'm watching this film. So maybe if you have a real emotional moment with your animals, you may want to wait a week or two to check this one out. But I thought it was a sweet movie. I thought it really gave depth to the characters. I mean, yeah, some of them, like there's a sea lion in there, and there's a dog that's his best friend. They're there for kind of comic relief, but the character of Ivan and the humanity that Sam Rockwell brings to his voice and his mocap performance, I mean, it's very sweet. It actually really works. And my wife's a teacher. So this is a book and she's read it in her class and everything. And when she heard that they're making it, she's like, oh, they're making one and only Ivan. And I'm like, oh, it could be like Doolittle. Could be a bunch of just farting animals. And then I watched it and I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to want to watch this weekend on Disney Plus. Cause I think it's exactly what you want to see. So I'm going to say, even though I know this is getting some mixed reviews, I have to say I really kind of fell in love with this movie. So I'm going to say the one and only Ivan rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is Tesla. Ethan Hawke stars as Nikola Tesla in this loose biopic about his ongoing feud with Thomas Edison.
May I introduce the brilliant Nikola Tesla, the greatest inventor of the age.
Thomas Alva Edison.
You got a light?
Oh, Tesla. Didn't see you there before.
I now have the pleasure of introducing you to a novel system of energy, alternate currents. This will transform the way the world works.
You live in your head.
Doesn't everyone?
First of all, before I even talk about this movie, I gotta say, I want to give props to Ethan Hawke. He's not chasing the Marvel movies. He's not chasing superhero films. He's not chasing big blockbusters. Every year he does a couple movies and they're different and interesting and they're movies he wants to do. And, you know, more power to him, man. I mean, I think he's a true artist. Now, with that said, in the movie Tesla, it's about a very popular figure now. Nikola Tesla was not popular decades ago. Now he's kind of got an allure to him because people see him, rightfully so, as the guy who got screwed out of a lot of things. Nikola Tesla was not a businessman. He was an inventor and a scientist and a brilliant one at that, but he was often taken advantage of. This movie puts a lot of these characters that you've heard, not just Tesla and Edison, but J.P. Morgan, who had a part in his life. And so that's interesting to see this snapshot of history of characters in different situations you're not used to seeing them. So overall, I like the premise of it. I like the idea, but they do a lot of purposeful, anachronistic stuff. And they have this narrator character who's one of the women in his life. And like she goes and she's like, if you Google Tesla, you only see this many stuff and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, that kind of stuff, trying to frame it in the modern world, that like goes too far. I don't mind a little bit of anachronisms. I don't mind a little bit of the music being wrong in terms of eras, and I don't mind there being effects like at one point they're walking into somewhere with a celebrity and there are all these flashbulbs, and flashbulbs didn't exist at that ability back then. If it's subtle, it's fine, but it gets a little overblown at times, and it does lose cohesion and focus as what they're trying to do, because they're trying to decide whether they want to make this about the feud between Tesla and Edison, or do we want to make this a movie about his own personal journey. So, I mean, I like the idea. I like the concept. I just don't think this was as effectively done as it could have been. So I'm going to say, at least for interest's sake, it kind of rocks, especially for the interest a lot of people have in Nikola Tesla now. But, I mean, it's kind of really right there on the fence.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Unhinged and have an interview with its director. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into another film, and that is Unhinged. Now, before I review it, I want to play a little interview I did with the director, Derek Bort, about not just the movie, but also being one of the first ones in the theater. First movie out of the gate for months. How do you feel about that, being the guy in the front of the pack on this one?
You know, look, it's crazy exciting. I mean, it could be a part of getting people back into the theaters, and yet it comes with tremendous responsibility and pressure to make sure that the right protocols are in place to ensure people's safety, which it definitely sounds like they are. So, you know, it's kind of a complex feeling of excitement and you know, also a serious side to it of you know, like I said, just doing the right thing.
What do you think is the stronger message? Is it that people are too quick to anger, or are people too disconnected?
You know, look, there's a universality to this film in terms of A, the proximity that we all have been and continue to be to being at the wrong place at the wrong time and having a run-in with someone who's gotten to that point where, you know, they feel that their only voice is violence, you know, their only way to deal with the rage that they're feeling or the disenfranchisement, let's say, that they're feeling is through some kind of violent act. And we've all been probably very close to those things, you know, one degree of separation away from them. So I think that's what is kind of the universal appeal of this film, is just kind of realizing that. But I think that, you know, the lack of civility that we see and the inability to take responsibility for one's actions and always wanting to kind of blame someone else. I think that, you know, these are themes that are not going anywhere anytime soon, it seems like.
Do you have any personal history with road rage? I mean, what's your scariest encounter, or what makes you mad on the road?
I mean, nothing makes me more angry than people flicking cigarette butts out on the road, which don't really decompose, you know. Yeah. Like, and I've definitely changed my ways in the times I've gotten out at a stoplight and picked up a cigarette butt and you know, flicked it back into somebody's car, them to use their ashtray. But my wife and kids have told me that I, you know, couldn't do that anymore. So thankfully, I didn't get shot or anything. But, you know, I've had people follow me because I, you know, may have accidentally, who knows, made a turn in front of them or something. You know, you never know. I mean, I'll look up and realize, wow, that somebody's following me and they're yelling at me or whatever and freaking out. And, you know, I mean, I think that we've all had some kind of experience. If you live somewhere where you have to drive, where you encounter some kind of a psycho driver.
Sure. Let's talk about the aspect of the movie that I was impressed with for sure, was the use of practical effects versus digital effects. It's always a toss up, and sometimes you have to do digital trickery to keep safety, to get the shot. But at least from what I could tell, the stuff that's happening on the road in this movie, that's all practical. I mean, how much did you use much digital to patch it up, or was it mostly practical?
Look, there are definitely visual effects in the movie. I think that, you know, if given a choice, I would always rather use practical effects, and we have a lot of that. And I think that the key to me is just using enough practical so that anything that you've done in post blends seamlessly, you know, in a way that never draws attention to the effect. There are some visual effects in the film, but, you know, I always try to go practical wherever possible.
Also with that is the sound design. That's an important part to it. Especially with the truck that Russell Crowe drives, especially at the beginning, it's almost predatory.
Yeah, you know, I think that was always something that we wanted to do early on, was give voice to the vehicles, you know. I think that his main vehicle definitely is a character in the film. And in working with the team at Formosa, trying to come up with a real sound for that truck, you know, was really important. And I think they did an amazing job with that. And as a film that really was meant to be seen in the theater, you know, sound design is a huge part of that. And you know, I think that, you know, we had such a great team that I'm really happy with what we were able to come up with.
Can you talk about any cinematic, I guess, inspirations? I mean, obviously Duel comes to mind, you know, Falling Down.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that Duel is the first thing that you kind of, you know, jump to. But funny enough, you know, Duel sort of sent me towards Jaws.
Okay.
You know, I just thought of Russell's character as the shark in Jaws in some way, where he kind of, because he's such an inhuman character and he shows up and leaves behind this trail of carnage, I just thought, I looked at Jaws a lot, you know, and Duel for sure. And, you know, I mean, I think that people definitely jump to Falling Down, and I think the characters are definitely very different. You know, when we meet the man, he's already at rock bottom, and has no voice at that point, and has already decided to turn to violence. But you know, I think that those are all valid touchstones.
Derek, thank you for taking the time to talk to me about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for your enthusiasm. Thanks for wanting to talk.
You can find the full interview of that, which adds a couple more minutes to our conversation. You can find that on fatguysatthemovies.com. So just visit there. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's go ahead and review Unhinged. Russell Crowe stars as a man at his lowest point who goes on a violent rampage following an altercation on the road.
Having a kind of a hard time lately.
I'm sorry.
Accept my apology?
Just ignore him.
If you could just do the same, we could press reset.
I don't have anything to apologize for.
Ma'am, are you okay?
I'm pretty sure the guy in that truck's following me.
He's road raging.
I don't think you really know what a bad day is. But you're gonna find out.
And I think the movie has some points to be made. Certainly, people are too quick to anger, and especially on the road. And I'll admit, I've had my bits of road rage before. I've also been on the receiving end of road rage, although I'm pretty careful that whenever I give a good solid honk at somebody, I'm able to get out of there pretty simply. But I know that that's an issue. And this is more than road rage with his character, because the character that Crowe plays is, he's a guy who's is at the end of his rope. His marriage is in the toilet. I'm assuming he's lost his job. And the movie opens up with him doing stuff that shows he is off the deep end. It's not about him being pushed to that precipice and then tipping over. He's off of that precipice. He's on his way down into the valley of horribleness. So, yeah, it's about being more civil to people, you know, giving the courtesy tap when you really should, you know, beep, beep, that sort of thing. But it also has a lot to say about people being disconnected. And that does get in the way at times, because there's things that this character does when he's, you know, basically stalking this woman and trying to ruin her life. And he's attacking people that she knows because he's stolen her phone. No one ever stands up for him. And there's one scene in there. I'm like, really? It looked like you're in the South. And I think it was filmed in New Orleans. And I'm like, nobody has a concealed carry in this diner that he's at, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, I think it at times overestimates the amount that people would not interact with something like that, especially if they felt that they could eventually be in trouble. And there's some weird little things that you say, well, this really couldn't happen this way, for example. But in a way, it reminds me a little bit of that movie Becky that came out earlier this summer, where it has to get ugly, and there are some ugly things that happen in here. If I were to say there's any real major complaint I have, because otherwise it's a road rage revenge movie, and you know you're going to like it or not pretty much from the trailers, I would say if there's any real complaint I have about it, it's that it takes too long for anyone to really fight back. And that's one of the things I liked about the movie Becky, is you have some ugly things happen, and then finally Becky fights back in that movie. And I wanted to see people actually going on the offensive a little earlier in this one. But I think Russell Crowe does a great job. And, you know, God bless him. My God, the guy looks like he's about 300 pounds. If he can go do major motion pictures, there's a chance for me too, because I mean, he has my body type in this movie. If I had hair on the top of my head, I mean, I already have the crazy beard. I could be his body double in this movie. And it does work as one of those stalker type revenge thrillers, you know, something like as I talked to Derek Bourne about is it's like Duel. So ultimately, I think it works, but it is an anxiety ridden movie. And for me right now, I got hot enough anxiety from all the other crap going on in my life. So if you want to go escape, if like you can get all that tension and then release when you get out, that's fine. But it is kind of high anxiety of a movie, which may or may not be what we need right now. It's not a calming force, that's for sure. But still, I'm going to say that Unhinged kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Sleepover, Words on Bathroom Walls, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Dora and the Lost City of Gold. Because we can't. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's do a couple more movie reviews. I mean, I actually got a lot on my plate this week. And one of them is something that's coming to Netflix this week, and that is The Sleepover. Malin Ackerman stars as a suburban mother who is actually a high-end thief in a witness protection program, kidnapped by her former associates while her children try to save her.
How would somebody take your parents?
We were big-time smugglers.
Then we went into witness protection.
I don't think your mom is just a regular mom.
Quit touching stuff. Let's go.
Better move.
you bring us this crown and no one gets hurt.
If we steal this, you leave my family alone.
We will find them. Mom left us tons of clues.
We've seen these kind of movies before with the suburbanite who is suddenly thrust into either a heist situation or a spy situation or action series. You know, something like Date Night with Tina Fey and Steve Carell, that was, what, about 10 years ago? Or is that movie Game Night with Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams? So this is a standard formula with people just being thrust in these situations. Even The Lovebirds, which came out on Netflix and was supposed to go to the theaters, but came out on Netflix, I think, in April. That's the one with Issa Rae and Kumail Nanjiani. That was another one where just average people were thrust into this major situation that's like a action movie. And you know what? It's a silly little film. I mean, that's what it's meant to be. And Malin Ackerman's fine in it, but actually the scene in terms of the adults, Malin Ackerman does fine. I'm not a huge fan of hers. And Joe Manganiello, who plays, of course, in like stuff like True Blood and Magic Mike, he's in this as well. He's funny. I think he's got a lot of knack in comedy. I wish he could do more, but really it's Ken Marino who plays Malin Ackerman's husband who steals the show in the adults. And he's the one who really kind of carries the heart and soul of the idiocy of their situation as she's dragged into this heist. But the kids, I got to hand it to the kids. The kids do a great job and they're all relatively unknown kids, but they're very, very funny. And that's the stuff I found most interesting because they're just bumbling through what they're doing. It's a teenage girl and her brother who's like 9 or something like that. And they're actually the funnier part. So it's kind of a movie that you can watch with the family. And it has all these sort of over the top elements, but ultimately it is a kid's movie. It's something that the family could watch if you're okay with, you know, a couple things blowing up. So I actually found it kind of fun. It ran a little long, but overall it's cute and it's something I enjoyed. So I'm going to have to say The Sleepover kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Words on Bathroom Walls. A teenager is diagnosed with schizophrenia and struggles to find a treatment while falling in love at a new school.
I have schizophrenia, a chronic mental disorder allowing for visual and auditory hallucinations. Never normal. The end.
Some people just hear voices.
Good morning.
But I see mine.
More awesome. I'm looking for you to believe in me.
I'm Maya.
I'm Adam.
I came over here to intimidate you into that something tells me you're harmless.
For the first time in forever, I felt normal.
This one stars Charlie Plummer in the lead role, and he does a fine job in it. The thing is, it's one of those movies, it kind of has two focuses. On one hand, it's trying to show an attempt, at least, to have a realistic portrayal of the struggles of mental illness. And look, I know schizophrenia is a real thing. I don't suffer from it. I don't know anyone who does. And so I've never had to deal with it firsthand. So I don't know if this is real or not. I don't know how appropriately done this is. But it also is trying to be this teen romance. And there's this whole breed of movies out there that romanticize illness. We saw that with something like, the Fault in Our Stars. That romanticized cancer. And that's nothing new. I mean, Love Story came out, what, 1970? And that was a movie that was all, it was a disease romance. But it's not just cancer or even, you know, a fatal disease. What was that one? There was one, what, 5 Feet Apart about the girl who didn't have an immune system. And then there was that other one that was very similar. I don't even remember the name of it, but the girl, she was, couldn't leave her room and the kid across the hall she had an interest in. There is a whole subgenre of movies, or even that one with Emilia Clarke and Sam Chaplin, Me Before You, about the woman who falls in love with the guy who's in a wheelchair. I mean, so this is just such a common thing, and I'm getting tired of the genre. And that's ultimately what this is also trying to be. It's this movie that romanticizes schizophrenia. And as much of a struggle as it is, that's what makes him interesting. And that's where his depth is. No one really gets to know him as a character because there is no depth outside of his actual schizophrenia. He has no character outside of the fact that that's his treatment and he's trying to survive. And the other thing with the schizophrenia that's as it's presented in the movie, is they have his hallucinations, auditorial and visual, manifest as these characters that he's running into and interacts with. And that almost makes it kind of charming. You're like, kind of like, oh, those people ground him, that he needs those people around, but they don't really show them as being as destructive. There's like this evil voice in his head that is the dark side, but that's really kind of kept at bay in a lot of ways. So I don't know. And like I said, I don't have schizophrenia. I don't know anyone who does. I don't fully appreciate firsthand the struggles. But I couldn't get into this movie because it was trying to make it almost too charming. So ultimately, I'm going to have to say Words on Bathroom Walls sucks. But if you want to, you can see it in theaters this weekend.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's home cinema pick, because we're getting very, very thin on the number of DVD and Blu-ray releases that are coming out, because everything is now VOD or it's already out somewhere streaming. So, you know, having a twofer is kind of weird, but there's not a whole lot coming out this week. I mean, I don't even know if there's any movies that are opening. There's a couple like vintage releases that are coming out that are probably the most, and a TV show. Batwoman. But I wanted to highlight something I swerved into, and it's a relatively recent movie, and it's that Dora the Explorer movie, Dora and the Lost City of Gold. So let's go ahead and play the trailer for that, and then let's talk about that. A young adventurer is kidnapped in order to get help in finding the legendary City of Gold.
Cousin Diego, you're so skinny and tall.
You are way more energetic than I remember. Dora, this isn't the jungle. It's high school. It's life or death. Keep a low profile.
Where did you transfer from?
The jungle.
Here's the scavenger hunt list. Team up in groups of four.
Oh. Hola, Dora.
Let me go!
You'll help us find your parents and the lost city of gold.
I swerved into this because it just showed up on Hulu. And one night I was up late, up way too late, and I'd been drinking probably more than I should have. And I'm like, you know, I've not seen this movie because they didn't screen it. I didn't get out to see it. And it wasn't one that I raced to go check out. And I was very curious about it. And the reason I was curious about it is because I watched Dora the Explorer with my kids. I mean, my oldest is 19 now, but when he was a little kid, I remember sitting there watching Dora the Explorer with him. So when this movie came out, I'm like, what the heck? So I decided to watch it. And first of all, Isabel Molnar is playing Dora, and she's already like, I think she's like, maybe she's 16, 17 or so in this, but she's developed. I mean, she's got breasts, and they spend so much time that you're either patting them down and trying to divert your attention from them because you're trying to make her act like just a little girl, even though she is Dora as a teenager. I mean, it has some funny moments to it. And I give her credit because she really dives into this movie. But I keep watching this film and thinking, who the heck did they make this for? I mean, is it for kids that watch Dora? Because it's not for kids that watch Dora right now, because they're older. So it doesn't make sense for like a 4-year-old to watch this one. And it's not that young of a kid's movie. So I guess, is it for kids that grew up with Dora but are out of it now? And then why would they want to see a Dora the Explorer movie? And the funniest parts are the kids that are along for the ride, who they get dragged into this thing, you know, for whatever reason, they're Dora's friends. And they're actually funny because they're fish out of water. But I mean, there's a whole scene where one of them has to poop. And so she's singing a song about digging a hole and pooping in the woods. And I'm like, I don't remember the poopy song in the Dora the Explorer TV series. And then I'm like, maybe it's for like kids like my son, who's 19, to watch it and feel really weird finding some sort of weird attraction to Dora the Explorer now. I don't know. I mean, it's certainly a mildly entertaining movie, but I don't think it fits with anyone who's ever seen Dora the Explorer. It's probably better watched by like a 10-year-old who's never encountered Dora in her life. But, you know, I mean, overall, I was mildly entertained by it. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks, but it just still flummoxes me why this was even made.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I've got to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.